that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're going to get across that wasteland, and we're going to do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Hi, I'm going to whisper some things to you now about Crunch chocolate bars. Because apparently this whispering thing is a thing that makes you feel things. It's saying something crunchy is coming in the candy wrapper language. Imagine your tongue hiking up those crispy, rocky ridges. Now, drum roll, please.
Wow, that's good. Crunchy, munchy chocolate doesn't whisper.
Turn up the fun with Crunch.
Golic and Smetty here.
And this will probably be controversial.
I'm a Big Mac and cheese guy. Welcome, everybody, to Golic and Smetty. I am Mike Golic Sr. She is Jess Smetana. And we have, as usual, kind of, and this time of year, a smorgasbord. I don't, never know if I pronounce that correctly. Smorgasbord?
Smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord? I always don't know if
it's a smorg. Or a smorg.
You try and smorg. Like, I can't roll my R's when you have to roll your R's, but smorgasbord. I say Borg, and I think
French.
It's bored. I don't even know.
Borg. I think it's with a G.
I think it's with a G as well. Yeah. Yeah. So they're
Notre Dame grads cutting it
up. Yeah, how about it? Yeah, they're cringing right now, going like, God, they have degrees
they just
from our school.
Took my diploma away, yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to say is there's a lot going on. A lot going on. So, obviously the World Cup and all the football going on, but basketball and hockey and baseball news with signings and college, this is that we're getting closer to the time of year now where there are some championships, you know, that are going on and more keep going on. I love this time through March with like kind of the non-revenue sport championships that are happening. So there's that going on as well. So I don't know where you want to start, Jess. You know where I always like to start. I always like to start with what you're baking because
I'm so
jealous of that. And you've been hitting it hard, haven't you?
I really have been. I've been getting in the Christmas spirit. I know we talked about the Christmas tree and my lack of decorations. You'll be pleased to know I bought a tiny 2-foot fake Christmas tree at Target a couple nights ago. But the real thing that gets me in the holiday spirit is baking Christmas cookies. I am a big Christmas cookie person. I usually make like 4 or 5 dozen cookies and then like different types of cookies and then put them in containers and hand them out to like my friends and family. I don't know who's gonna get the cookies this year since I don't have a ton of family down here in Miami. Maybe I'll bring them in for Stugatz to eat. Maybe I'll ship some to you, Mike. They actually do ship pretty well.
They travel well. You put them in a tin. They travel well. I talked so good about you. You know, when I was doing this DraftKings groundbreaking, you know, DraftKings sportsbook that they're putting at the TPC here in Scottsdale.
Oh, okay. Tell me more. What did you say about
afterward? I had to go on shows and talk stuff. And oh yeah, I mean, talking about what a star you are. I was building you up.
I'll fact check how much I was talking about you.
Ad nauseum. They actually had me shut up. We have to go to break. Am I doing well enough here to get sent some?
Yeah,
cookies?
Yeah. I mean, okay, it worked the first time you said you were being nice to me. Anyways. I baked these shortbread cookies. I think shortbread cookies are very underrated Christmas cookies because they burn very easily. So it's hard to get the perfect shortbread from scratch. But they had pistachios, chocolate, and candied orange rind in them. And they are so good, Mike. And then I had some leftover banana this morning that was going bad. So I made some marbled chocolate banana bread. And it had rum in it, too, which was a little added delicious touch. So yeah, I'm deep in the Christmas cookie baking. I've probably got a few more recipes I want to try before the week of Christmas, and that's when I'm going to bake my big batches of cookies and ship them out.
Do you, when you make cookies, do you frost them? Do you do different frostings, or you just make the cookie and...
I'm not that good with the frosting. No. I really need to practice. That it's hard. Like the Instagram accounts that I follow that make the frosted sugar cookies for Christmas, They make it look so easy, and they do, these don't intricate they? Designs. Like, I can't even get the colors right on the dye. Like, I can't do it. It's too hard. But no, I don't really do those. I would like to master it someday. That's on my list. But in the meantime, I'm going for flavor. I'm going for things with lots of, like, you know, dried fruit and chocolate and nuts. Those are very Christmassy. The jam cookies with, like, the thumbprints in them, the pistachios, all of that. Oh. I actually saw a recipe for gingerbread latte cookies the other day, and that's what I'm going to make either tonight or tomorrow night, because I got all the ingredients for it, and they sound amazing.
Oh my God. I hope one day I go to the mailbox and find a tin there.
We'll see.
Of that. Because speaking of banana bread, I'm one of those around the house here when there's bananas. There's a time I'll want to grab a banana and then I'll go like, no, I want it to age, because then I know Chris is going to make some banana bread. And sure enough, yesterday I just finished off the last batch of her banana bread. So I was very, very happy about that. I'm a big banana bread fan. Put a little confectionery sugar on it, some whipped cream on it, and we're good to go. So I always love talking about baking with you. It puts me in such a good mood. Before we talk about anything bad going on in sports, but there's a lot of good going on in sports, right?
This weekend was awesome.
Our alma mater in women's basketball is shining brightly, is it not?
It definitely is, Mike. The biggest thing that happened this weekend for Notre Dame fans, which we will talk about briefly here at the top, is the massive win over UConn. Big regular season win. Notre Dame was ranked number six going into the game. UConn was ranked number three. Notre Dame lost to Maryland on a buzzer beater a few nights before the game, which was pretty devastating. That was their first loss of the season. And they came back against UConn and just were so dominant. UConn star player did get hurt in the second half, so that was a bummer for them, and she's going to be out for a few weeks. But it was undoubtedly probably the biggest win of Neil Ivy's, you know, regular season coaching career at home in front of a sellout crowd. It was just crazy. They won. They were leading by more than 10 points for most of the game. I think UConn cut the deficit down to 5 briefly in the third quarter because Olivia Miles got in some foul trouble, but other than that, I mean, they were pretty dominant throughout the entire game, all 4 quarters, and were just shooting well, defending, rebounding, and it was crazy to watch.
Kind of wish I was still at my place in South Bend during that time to go watch that game, because I'm going to tell you, Jess, I went through hell when I was in Connecticut working at ESPN because we were losing most of those games to the UConn women. And Rebecca Lobo was always doing the games, a former UConn, you know, all everything. And her and I had become great friends at ESPN. And I would always have to have the confidence in my Irish that they would win. So I'd always bet her. And I would always lose. I've had my face painted with UConn stuff. I've had to do so much shit, you know, and basically eat so much shit in those years because UConn was beating our women. And usually I'd go to the games that would be out there in Hartford, and it was tough. So when I saw that game and I saw them win, and I felt so good, I wished so bad I had a bet going with Rebecca on that, because a nice win for us. So I said, I think we're what, sitting at number 5 now, and UConn dropped behind us to 6. Mm-hmm. I think that's the last ranking.
And Fudd will be out for, I think I mentioned, like 3 to 4 weeks or 3 to 5 weeks. She's had some injury trouble, so she'll definitely need to get healthy for UConn, because they struggled shooting a little bit without her. I think it was her first scoreless game either of the season or of her career, but really, like you said, really humongous win, and it's a bummer that you're not still in Connecticut to paint your face with Notre Dame stuff. Is that how that works, or do you paint
I would have hurt weird at We would have painted her face with Notre Dame stuff. That's how it was. She actually came on my show there and on air painted my face, you know, blue and white, whatever their colors are.
Right.
I would have loved to have had to get to paint her face, you know, blue and gold. But no, never really got to happen, unfortunately.
Oh, man. Well, that was a crazy game. The other thing that happened, and we briefly talked about the Notre Dame women's soccer team losing in the tournament to North Carolina earlier this season, but the final in the NCAA soccer national championship was last night, or Monday night, I should say, and the ending, Mike, I want to tell you about because it was nuts. We've been talking a lot about soccer lately because of the World Cup. I think this finish was probably crazier than anything I've seen so far in the World Cup, maybe aside from Morocco beating Spain in penalty kicks, which was unexpected to say the least. But what happened was North Carolina, the one seed, they were up 2-0 in the 80th minute against UCLA. UCLA scored two goals, including a goal off of a corner kick with 16 seconds left in regulation. To tie it up 2-2. The goal that they scored, the second goal that tied it at the end of the game, a little controversial. A lot of UConn, or a lot of North Carolina fans wanted the UCLA girl to get a foul called on her because she kind of like boxed out the goalie and the goalie fell into the goal, but it counted. They didn't call a foul, went into double overtime, and then UCLA scored the game-winning goal with 3 minutes left in the second overtime. So they won the national championship in overtime after trailing two goals in the 80th minute of the game. So it was an absolutely insane finish. And the game was in North Carolina in front of all North Carolina fans who were just shell-shocked from the finish. So I needed to tell you about that because I could not believe what I was watching.
And that was North Carolina's a team that knocked Notre Dame out, correct?
Yes.
Earlier in the tournament, And then they lost. That's mean. I'm sorry. I shouldn't say that. That's not nice.
No, but Mike, as Notre Dame fans, like we really do revel in the losses of our enemies, which is my segue into talking about the Pac-12 championship on Friday night, because USC had a chance to make the college football playoff for the first time. They've never made it before. Their program has been suffering in the dark ages for a decade with all of the various horrible things that have been happening in that athletic department. And then they hired Lincoln Riley, and he brought Caleb Williams with him to Pasadena. And they were on the verge of making the playoff. All they had to do was beat Utah in the Pac-12 championship game. And Mike, that is not what happened on Friday night.
Hey, kudos to Utah. Utah beat USC twice. USC had two losses, both to Utah. The first one was just was a one-point game, 43-42. So, and now USC, you know, had everything to gain in this one. They were right there because of what happened the week before. So they're sitting in the four slot. All they have to do is win, and they couldn't do it. And they lose big, 47-24 in that one. So they went from fourth all the way down to 10. They were out of this thing, and Utah ended up ahead of them in the final rankings, sitting at number 8. But, you know, we talked about it last week, and I said, you know, I think there'll be at least one of the top four teams that lose, and we had two of them lose. But, you know, we talked about this. If USC lost, they were going to be out because they now had two losses. It would be to the same team. They were going to be gone. And we said if TCU lost a close one, they're probably going to be in it. And that's exactly what happened. They lose in overtime to Kansas State. I think it was, 31-28 or right in that area there.
Like you said.
And I remember putting out on Twitter, this is what I think will be the Final Four. And I said, I think it'll be Georgia. And Michigan hadn't played. I said, I think Michigan beats Purdue. It'll be Georgia, Michigan, TCU, Ohio State. And everybody was just like, how can TCU lose and not drop, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, who are you putting ahead of them? I said, you're not. Ohio State is not going to not play and jump all the way to number 3. You know, maybe if TCU got blown out, that might have happened, but I didn't see that happening. I know Alabama fans were all like, well, if you truly want to take the top 4 teams, Alabama is one of the top 4. I mean, that was their song and dance, and I don't blame them. If you're a fan, you want your team in. But they weren't getting in. So I thought this would be the Final Four. And I didn't think Ohio State would jump to 3 because then you'd have Michigan and Ohio State playing in the semis. And I didn't think the committee would want that right away since they basically just played. If they're going to meet again, they both have to earn it to play in the finals, which I don't think I don't think they will. I think Michigan will, but I think Ohio State's going to lose to Georgia in this one. So I had no problem with the Final Four. Did you?
I didn't have a problem with it at all. And we should add USC now in the Cotton Bowl against Tulane, which is actually a game I'm really excited for. I love getting to watch these like G5, P5 matchups with the teams that just barely miss the playoff, like we saw with UCF and Auburn, I think it was a couple years ago. But, or it might have been, was it Auburn? Yeah, I don't know. I'll fact check that. Anyways, I agreed with the final four selections. I don't think there, I mean, I think it was a no-brainer. I don't think there was any way Alabama was going to jump any of the one-loss teams without playing this past weekend. I think that there's this, you know, philosophical argument between, you know, best team and most deserving team, and maybe Alabama gets your consideration for being one of the best four teams because they're Alabama and they're coached by Nick Saban, but this season they weren't one of the most deserving teams because they lost both of those regular season games that they just needed to win to make the playoff. I think they still could have made it as a two-loss team this season if the second loss had been in the SEC championship game, if they had beaten LSU and just had one loss to Tennessee, but that they didn't get to play in the SEC championship game, so it made it really, really difficult to leapfrog, you know, Ohio State in that case. I think it would have been really interesting to see what would happen if USC won on Friday night, and then we had to have a situation where we're deciding between TCU, USC having one loss, and Ohio State having one loss, and what would have happened in that situation. But I think it's also one of those years where, like, there's really still one team in my mind that is the most dominant college football team, and to me this playoff is going to be to determine who plays Georgia in the national championship. If it's anything other than that, I will be extremely surprised. So I'm looking forward to the playoff games. I'm more so looking forward to some of these bowl games. It's not like a crazy exciting bowl slate the way that it's set up this year. There's a couple matchups that I'm looking forward to. It's really hard to evaluate what we'll see in the bowl games now because of the transfer portal and because of coaches leaving. Like, Mike, did you see Scott Satterfield is taking the Cincinnati head coaching job, and Louisville, his, you know, now former team, is playing Cincinnati in the Fenway Bowl. So that is a totally bizarre situation. I don't know if it's ever happened before in college football. If it has, I'm not aware of it. And there's just tons of these situations now that didn't happen, you know, 5 years ago in these postseason games where you're like, I don't know what to expect when we watch this.
Well, I agree with you. Not so much, or a big part of that too is coaching changes. Like, you know, all the different coaching changes. You know, you see Deion Sanders took the Colorado job, but he is going to coach his team in the bowl game. It's always different. Like, he talked to his team at Jackson State. He talked to the Colorado players. And I like that. I like when a coach, if he's going to leave, at least talks to the team he's leaving. Too many coaches don't do that and just take off, you know, and that really pisses me off that you don't spend time there. Your dog is lounging so comfortably.
She just had, like, the craziest twitch, like, like sleep spasm thing that I've ever seen, and I honestly got afraid for a second.
Looks very, very comfortable there.
Very comfortable. Yeah, she's passed out.
But then you get to the players. Like, I don't expect, and I don't think it's been announced yet, that Michael Mayer for Notre Dame, the best tight end in the land, I would doubt he'd play in the Gator Bowl. I mean, why would he? I mean, there's no reason to do that at all.
That's an interesting one. I've heard that no one really knows what he'll decide. Like, he may play in the game because he's one of those, you know, players that, like, really loves to play football.
Yeah,
and
he wants to
play with the team. He also may, you know, make a business decision, which is totally understandable. Notre Dame, we haven't mentioned yet, but they are playing in the Gator Bowl against South Carolina in Jacksonville. An interesting matchup. Because, you know, Notre Dame and South Carolina typically do not play each other. There's predictions that it will be a sellout crowd. So this game may mean something for these fans of both teams. I don't know how much I really, like I said, I don't know really how to gauge, like, what to expect from these games. Notre Dame's starting quarterback, Drew Pine, entered the transfer portal Monday. So Tyler Buchner, I guess, will be starting
supposed to be back, if not maybe Angeli, the young kid.
The freshman, yeah. So again, freshman, it's like, I have no idea how to evaluate this. But yeah, like you said, Michael Mayer may or may not be playing. And so, yeah, there's just a lot of weird things to consider now when you're looking at what to expect from all of these games.
The best thing about bowl games, and for this one anyway, we may go to it because we may have a bet with Darius Rucker in this one, the South Carolina.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
So we may all be meeting in Jacksonville for this one and have some fun with that. But you can, I'm 100% in agreement with you that you don't know what's going to happen in these in these bowl games, and I don't put a lot on them. I don't put a lot on them at all because, man, you get players in with different attitude. It's just not like a regular season game. Some players won't play. Others will play. Others won't even want to be there while they're playing. It's really difficult to evaluate. The best thing about it, and I'll put it in the terms of Notre Dame, but this is really all schools, is you get 15 practices. And now you can practice those young guys. They can get all the reps. Now, you do have to prepare for a game at some point. And also the beauty of it used to be, if you played in four games, it counts as a year. And it used to be the first four games of the season. And afterward, you couldn't play at all. Now it's four games anywhere. So a lot of teams can save that fourth game for the bowl game and let these young kids who haven't burned a year play in the bowl game. Certainly you risk an injury and then rehabbing in the offseason, but I think it's great. So you can practice young guys, you can play young guys. So I think it's fantastic. I think the big news for our school, and it's going to turn out again, we talk about Notre Dame a lot, but this is going to be true of all schools because of how much it happened last year, is the transfer portal. There's got to be a million players in the transfer portal. It's unbelievable. Yes. What goes on with this? And I get it because you don't have to sit that year anymore. So you can go and you can play. So these coaches aren't just recruiting 18-year-olds in their living rooms anymore. They're recruiting second-year players, third-year players, fifth-year players. And for Notre Dame, it's like, which quarterback are they going to get? You know, because they're going to get a quarterback. You know, Drew Pine, people jumping on Drew Pine saying, oh, he's quitting, he's leaving. Drew Pine is doing exactly what Drew Pine needs to do.
Yeah, of course.
I have zero problem. Drew Pine filled in. He was a backup. He filled in. He did a nice job, especially toward the end of the season. He did a real nice job. And he's not going to be the quarterback of Notre Dame next year. He's not, again, unless he came back and there were some injuries, but he's not. So I don't blame him going somewhere else to try and play. Notre Dame is going to bring in a transfer. I mean, names out there, Devin Leary from North Carolina State, he's out there and he's available. Spencer Sanders from Oklahoma State, who was, I think, the freshman of the Big 12 Offensive Freshman of the Year in 2019, was all Big 12 in 2021.
Played against Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl last year. I've also heard Hudson Card's name being mentioned. He was a Texas backup this year.
Yep.
But yeah, Mike, like you said, I mean, anyone who's getting on any player's case for transferring, it seems like every quarterback is in the portal right now. And a lot of them are going to get probably paid money to go elsewhere. So why wouldn't you go in the portal and see what you're worth? I don't know if it's the best decision for every player, but who knows better than those players to make that decision for themselves. It's not up to the NCAA or the fans to decide what is best for a college athlete if they're not in a situation that they think is the best situation for them. So yes, I wish nothing but the best on Drew Pine. I'm glad that it sounds like the Notre Dame coaching staff had an honest conversation with him about what his future would be in that locker room. And so I think that that's always the best case scenario for the athlete to know, you know, if they're not going to play, if it's going to be a competition, if they're not, you know, expected to play at all, like tell them up front, tell them when the portal opens up in December, even if that means your odds of winning the bowl game goes down. I mean, that's the right thing to do. And I think in a lot of ways, these bowl games now in the transfer portal era are more like off-season, like spring scrimmage practices than anything else. Like you said, you get to play young players, you get to see, you know, some new faces maybe, but they're not going to totally have, you know, a huge impact on anything moving forward with your next season.
100% agree. And with Drew Pine, I'm glad they had that discussion, but I'll tell you, Jess, players usually know where they stand more than anybody. Drew had to see writing on the wall that he wasn't going to be the guy and it was going to be difficult for him to get on the field. So, and for those that complain and said, oh, these kids all transfer too quick, they're afraid of competition. No, these guys get 4 or 5 years to show what they can do if they want to play at the next level. And they got to be on the field to show that. And if it means going somewhere and getting on the field somewhere, even if it's a smaller school, but able to get the reps and get the looks that they need to try and make it at the next level. And a lot of them won't, but some will. I have no problem with that. I mean, I get a little tired sometimes of people ripping these players, saying, oh, it's a soft generation. They quit too quickly. Man, No, they have the ability to do what they need to do for themselves.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them. Look, coaches do it all the time.
I was just going to say, Scott Satterfield's a great example. Like, he's leaving before the bowl game starts. Now, I read that he might, like, recuse himself from both sidelines during the bowl game, which is... I mean, like, the whole situation is absurd. I don't think it's something that will ever happen again. What are the odds, right? Like, there's nothing really that can be done about it. It is just kind of absurd to think that he could choose to coach on either side. And if he coached for Cincinnati, he'd know all Louisville's playbook. If he coached for Louisville, like, he's, you know, making his life harder the next season as a Cincinnati. It's just, like, it's so ridiculous that this happened. But it is a little funny, and it is one of the reasons why I do enjoy college football so much.
Yeah, you know, he can publicly recuse himself, but I would imagine he might be given some intel either way. But, yeah, I get tired of it. Coaches sign a 7-year deal, and 2 years in, they jump to another school. So any coach that sits there in some 18-year-old's, you know, living room and says, I'm going to be there for your entire career, you know, you better take that with a grain of salt. I couldn't even imagine coaches saying that anymore with a straight face. Because you just can't believe them.
Yeah.
And I'm not even blaming them all the time. The system lets them do all of this. And the system now lets the players do it. So I don't want to hear people shitting on the players when the coaches are the ones that have been doing this forever. So if the players want to make a move, and like you said, a lot of times it's the wrong move. You know, maybe they jump the gun on it, but let them make the decision. Hell, JT Daniels is about to go to his fourth team. You want to talk about a guy maybe overthinking things and moving on. And maybe there are guys like that. But what has it been? It's been USC, Georgia, West Virginia. Now he's going to go to his fourth team.
Yeah. And like Phil Jurkovec, the former Notre Dame quarterback, now is going to be the Pitt quarterback next year. He's from Pittsburgh. He's, you know, going back with his BC offensive coordinator from last season. That's like the new thing, right? These, especially like at the quarterback position, if you find a coordinator or a coach that you like and then they move, you're suddenly someone everyone's looking at. Okay, maybe they're going to follow them or join or enter the portal. And if you're, you know, if you have a, like what Lincoln Riley did with Oklahoma and USC, if you're trying to fill a vacancy, either head coach or offensive coordinator, and you know that this coach will be able to lure this player away, and it's a player like Caleb Williams, or you know, it's hard to find that many players of that caliber, but you know what I mean, an important player, a skill position player that they need, that makes that hire even more, you know, favorable for that school too. So those are all things that now I've never really considered before as a college football fan that I'm looking at. I'm on the Wikipedia page. I'm like looking at the right hand column where it has a list of everyone's school, you know, schools that they've coached at and what position groups they've coached. And I'm trying to put together the puzzle pieces and figure out where all these quarterbacks are going to end up going. But it all happens really fast. Like the college football offseason now in a lot of ways is turning into what January is for NFL teams, where the Monday after the last regular season game, people are getting fired or hired or something crazy is going on that you don't expect. And so that's going to be probably like the next month of college football. It's like figuring out who's going where, who's playing in the bowl game, who's not playing in the bowl game, who's playing in the playoff games. Because there's a couple, I mean, Ohio State's, you know, one of their star wide receivers, it sounds like, is not coming back for the bowl game. Jackson's in Jigba. He's been hurt
and he's been nicked up. I get it. You know, he's had the hamstring that he hurt against Notre Dame. He tried to play in a couple of more games and has not been 100%. So I understand that.
Totally.
It will be interesting if in the college football playoffs we get a completely healthy player who says, I'm not playing.
Yeah.
That will be kind of the next thing because – you know, every critic has taken their turn now, ripping the players that don't go play in the Tax Slayer Bowl or the Gator Bowl or the whoever the hell
those
bowl
are the,
this
those
is.
Those are the same bowl this year, I think. I think the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl.
The Tax Slayer Gator Bowl. There you go. So I picked on one bowl game, and I didn't mean to. But you know what I mean. I mean, they're not going to a bowl game with their 6-5 team or 6-6 team or 8-4 team. I mean, come on, who cares?
So, I mean, I do wonder if that happens with an expanded playoff more often. If you're a 12 seed and you don't think you're going to make it to the national championship and you have to play maybe like 1-3 additional games in December and you're someone that is getting, you know, mocked in the first round, I could see that happening. And then I think people who have a problem with players skipping bowl games now are going to have an even bigger problem with that situation. And it's kind of the same thing for me. Like, I understand it, so I would never criticize a player for doing that. But yeah, I could totally see that happening.
Sergeant and Mr. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Bunk beds in a closet?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. Isn't it bullshit to have to question where your food comes from? At Vital Farms, you can trace your pasture-raised eggs all the way back to the source, the pasture. On the side of each pasture-raised carton of eggs, you'll find the name of the farm where your eggs were laid. And when you look the farm up on their website, you'll get a peek at all the sunshine, fresh air, and open space the hens enjoy. Learn more and find out where to buy them at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit free.
Yep, I could as well, and you're right. So, and again, for those that may not know, 2024 season, that's the first year they're going to do the expanded playoffs, where I think the first four will get byes, and then it'd be like 12 against 5 and so on.
Yeah.
But you're right. I think that's...
I still don't know the full... I haven't been following the full details. I know the Rose Bowl was like holding out because the Rose Bowl wants to do...
Seriously. Like, they were really going to not be involved in this thing. I mean, come on. So... we'll get all the details of it. Bottom line is they're expanding, and I'm happy about it. Quick last note on college before we move on to football and then football is we do have the final four for the Heisman, the award I hate. Georgia, Stetson Bennett, USC's Caleb Williams, TCU's Max Duggan, and Ohio State C.J. Stroud. And what do they have in common? What do they normally have in common for this award? They're all quarterbacks. It's a quarterback award. I can't stand it. I barely watch it anymore. Maybe it's maybe people think as I hate quarterbacks. I don't hate quarterbacks, but there are a lot of great players out there. But it always seems to fall to the quarterback, and I get it. They have to be how involved they are in the offense, touch the ball every play, blah blah blah. But I think it gets ridiculous. People start looking at the best stats or the best stats of the quarterback on the best team, and that's who's a finalist. And I think it's such an overrated award, unfortunately, because it's so revered, and I understand that.
Yeah, I mean, there already is a quarterback-specific award, and that is not what the Heisman is supposed to be. But like you said, it seems like every year the Heisman finalists are quarterbacks. Sometimes, you know, occasionally a running back, occasionally a wide receiver, like Devonta Smith won it a couple years ago.
Right.
But like the best player from the number one ranked team that stays healthy the entire season. Because like Blake Corum has been Michigan's best player this season, and he's not a finalist, even though he's probably been their most valuable player. He got hurt 2 weeks ago, so he's like totally out of the running now. So like you have to stay healthy. You have to be on a team that either makes the playoff or is ranked in the top five or is Alabama, I guess. And if you're a quarterback, even better. I can't remember who I saw tweet this when the Heisman finalists were announced, but they tweeted something like, the Heisman finalists are the quarterbacks from the best teams that the voters think should be named Heisman. I totally botched that. But it's like this year's Heisman finalists are who Heisman voters think other Heisman voters are voting for. Something like that. It's like become this thing where it's like, oh, Caleb Williams seems like he should be. And now that's not a knock on Caleb Williams because he's going to win the Heisman and I think he deserves it. But when you're seeing four quarterbacks and they're all from, you know, Georgia, TCU, Ohio State, and USC, it's like, how is like there no one else in here getting votes?
Completely agree. Completely agree. So that's coming up in a week or so, and or pretty soon, actually. I think sooner than a week. But so we'll see. Big thing this weekend. If you haven't had a chance, everybody, I would say try and watch the Army-Navy game that goes on this December 10th. I believe it's just an incredible thing to watch. It's spectacular. If you ever can get to it in person, I would always say give it your best shot because it is very, very, very cool to watch. So On to the NFL. Quickly, what do you think of your Steelers? They've won two in a row, and now they're playing the Ravens. Well, now they're playing the Ravens, who, well, I'm sure, I don't think Lamar Jackson's going to be playing this week.
No,
he's going to be
not.
A week-to-week guy, but not going to be this week. So your Steelers at 5-7, though, winning a couple in a row with their rookie quarterback.
Yeah, well, to be honest, Mike, I didn't even watch the game on Sunday because my boyfriend made me watch the Giants-Commanders 2020 tie that was happening at the same time. So I missed the almost – Steelers almost choked a little bit at the end of the fourth quarter, let the Falcons get back in it, but they won. So I'm aware of, you know, what happened. I saw the highlights. But, yeah, I'm feeling like, you know, it'd be nice to get a higher pick in the first round, but I also don't like watching them lose, and I also want Kenny Pickett to play well. So I'm in a complacent place right now with this team. Now, when it comes to the rest of the teams in the NFL, I'm in the same place as I was last week. I still don't know who's good. I did not expect the Bengals to beat the Chiefs again.
Yeah.
And now I have to, you know, change my opinion of the Bengals a little bit and give them a little bit more credit. I did not expect the 49ers to beat the Dolphins with a backup quarterback. And you've said the last few weeks that you've had your eyes on the 49ers for a team that you think will be the team to beat in the playoffs. And now Jimmy G is hurt. And Brock Purdy, the former Iowa State star, played, I think he was the quarterback in the Camping World Bowl against Notre Dame in 2019, right?
Yeah, I believe he was. He was Mr. Irrelevant in the draft. I did a couple of his games when I was calling college games. I like him. He set like 32 school records. So
he
we'll
was there
see.
For like 4 years, though, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So
yes,
that helps.
Yes, he was.
But
yeah.
Yeah. So he's going to be the 49ers quarterback. But do you think they're going to trade for anyone or sign
anyone?
Well,
they can't trade. The trading deadline's over.
That's right. Sorry.
It's going to be. Who do they? It's who's sitting on the couch as a free agent, or if somebody gets cut, aka Baker Mayfield, then you have to. It's 24 hours to clear waivers. Now, again, for people that don't know, when a player gets cut, the worst team in the league basically gets first dibs to sign him, and it goes according to that. So, if the 49ers wanted to claim him, I think they're 24th, like in line to claim. Somebody because of their record, and as we're taping this, Baker Mayfield is within that 24-hour on the waiver wire period. So by the time people are listening to this, that may have already been decided. Because I had said, and I know you have to go through this, Jess, the process. But man, if you could backdoor talk your agent in with other teams and the team, you know, that you want him to be on. Could you pull it off? Because if I were Nick Foles, who is the backup in Indianapolis, they're not going anywhere. They're bad right now. Matt Ryan won't be the quarterback next year. I just did the Dallas Indy game, which was actually 21-19 going into the fourth quarter.
And that's when Dallas, I fell asleep and I woke up and I looked at the score and I was like, how is this wrong? How do they score 33 points in one quarter?
It didn't feel like it was a two-point game going to the fourth quarter. The Cowboys were the better team, but the Colts were right there. And then turnovers turning into touchdowns. It was just brutal. But if I'm Indy now, hell, I'm putting Sam Ellinger back out there. I'm like, I got to see. Let me see what I got in him. We're not going to make the playoffs. Nick Foles is a backup right there right now. Again, I don't know if you can finagle it that way because there's, as I said, 23 other teams in front of you. For Nick Foles to go in and say, hey, can you cut me so I can have a chance to get on a, you know, a different team? Could he make it all the way to the 49ers? Would he clear waivers? Or would there be another team with an injured quarterback who may be pushing for the playoffs that may grab a Nick Foles? So that's the time. And you already heard Kyle Shanahan saying, well, you know, we like the players on our team. You know, we haven't had really discussions about Baker Mayfield. Well, he sure as shit isn't going to say, yeah, we're going to take him because there's 23 other teams. Yeah. And some of those teams may pick him up just to block it.
Just
to block him. So we'll
That's
have to wait and see. Just that one really, because I think it was going to end up being San Francisco and the Eagles as the two best teams in the NFC. Now, listen, the Cowboys are playing great ball right now. But what they all have in common is they have excellent defenses. That keep them in games. But losing Garoppolo really, really hurt them. They lost Elijah Mitchell again. to the IR they had early in the season. He got hurt in game one. That hurt him. So just when they were starting to get guys healthy, now they get a couple hurt, including Garoppolo. So we'll have to wait and see where that goes. But, you know, I put out a top five for DraftKings every week, and I think you have to put Philly number one right now still. I think that they have to be number one. Who did I put? Kansas City 2. I put Dallas 3, Buffalo 4, and Minnesota at 5. You know, I'm not sure how much people buy into Minnesota still, but they're still getting the job done. So you kind of got to give them their due.
Well, I still think people don't buy into Philadelphia either. I think that beating the Titans, I think, was pretty, like, that's a solid opponent for them to beat. But there's still people saying that the, you know, early part of their schedule was too easy, and, you know, they're just a sham team that they're going to get tested in the playoffs and lose. But I agree with you. They're still my number one team in my hypothetical power rankings. Mike, I also looked up the box score from the Camping World Bowl. Brock Purdy went 17 for 30, 222 yards, zero touchdowns, zero interceptions. So if you need to know that at any point the rest of the season, now you know that. 222 yards, 17 for 30. You're welcome. But yeah, I mean, this Seahawks, are they still anywhere for you? I mean,
no, you know what? I still think San Francisco is going to win that division. They're ahead of them right now, and they've already beat Seattle one time this year. So I do think they have enough talent, especially on defense, that'll keep them in every game. Brock Purdy just needs to not turn the ball over. You have enough weapons on offense. Get it out to those guys. I don't care if it's quick slants, jet sweeps to Deebo Samuel. I don't care. Just get the ball out of your hands into your players' hands, your star players, and see where it goes. So I still think they can win that division, because I don't know if you're getting a wild card out of that. I mean, I really don't. Hell, you might get the whole NFC East in there. We'll see. or maybe you'll get one out of the West. We'll see as well. But for the Eagles, I mean, they beat the Packers and rushed for over 360 yards. They beat the Titans and threw for over 300 yards and held Derrick Henry in check. I know he had a shoulder issue, but I buy into the Eagles. I've covered them twice this year. They're very, very balanced, and that's what I look for. I think San Francisco's balanced. I think the Eagles are balanced. I think the Cowboys are balanced. Once they got Dak back, basically from week 7 on, they have been 1 or 2 in all the major categories on the offensive side of the ball. And their defense, they lead the league in sacks, and they lead the league in giving up the least amount of sacks. So that's pretty damn good. So to me, those are the big balanced teams in the NFL, especially in the NFC side, to where I think the NFC looks pretty deep. Deeper than, because we thought the AFC was going to be the deep conference, right? But now yes. I don't know how deep it is. We've seen Buffalo fall off a little bit. We'll see where Miami goes. It looks like Tua, who hurt his ankle, is going to play and not going to miss any time. Lamar may miss some time, so we're not sure there. Cincinnati did get Jamar Chase back, which is huge for them, and they seem to have Kansas City's number. So, you know, are people looking at a Kansas City, Cincinnati, Buffalo top three AFC? Do you put Miami in there? You know, I don't know with Lamar where it's good, because their offense, even before Lamar got hurt, wasn't doing anything in their last game.
I still think the AFC is deep, but it's not deep in terms of, like, there being 4 or 5 elite teams like we thought there would be coming into the season. I think it's more of, like, a handful of, like, really good teams that have a little bit more, you know, in common in the sense that, like, you're not really sure which one ultimately is going to win, but they're all solid. In terms of, like, being balanced, though, I don't know which of those teams is the most balanced. I would have said, you know, Miami was playing pretty well until they only scored 17 points against San Francisco. And then you have to wonder, like, if they're going to be able to score in December against the Bills on the road, and if they're going to be able to, like, you know, execute the offensive game plan they want with, I know they have like a major O-line injury now. Tua's already gotten banged up because of it. But how is that game plan going to work against better defenses in the playoffs? So I'm not really sure who my top pick in the AFC is. It was the Chiefs until Sunday, and now the Bengals once again have knocked off the Chiefs. In a situation where I thought the Chiefs were for sure going to win. And now the Chiefs, they did miss a field goal at the end of the game that would have tied it before the Bengals went down the field and won the game. But Yeah, that was, I was not expecting that. Does that change anything for you in terms of how you view Cincinnati?
Yeah, it does, you know, because I wasn't sure about Cincinnati. I wanted to see when Ja'Marr Chase came back and how he's going to, really not when he came back, but how is he going to be the rest of the year? You know, is it a lingering injury? Were you done with it completely? Are you healthy? Because for the top teams, a lot of it's about attrition. How healthy can you be when the playoffs start? Again, doesn't matter what your record is. It's nice to get the bye. We know only the top teams in each conference get the bye. So the rest are playing. So six out of the seven teams are playing anyway. So you want to be as healthy as you can be by the time the playoffs start without any lingering injury. So we'll see with Ja'Marr Chase because he's clearly their best player on offense. The one last note I wanted from my side anyway in the NFL is we did have the return of Deshaun Watson. So whatever anybody thinks of Deshaun Watson and what he's done, what he was accused of, how the league handled it, I'm talking now from a complete football standpoint. Should we be shocked that he didn't look good? I mean, the dude didn't play all last year, didn't play for the first 11 games this year. I'm not sure what the expectation was of him to play. The game was awful. The game was a 27-14 win over the Texans with one offensive touchdown. One. The scoring went Texans field goal, Texans safety, Cleveland punt return for a touchdown, Cleveland defensive touchdown on a fumble return, Houston field goal, field goal for Cleveland, and then you had one touchdown by the Cleveland Browns on an interception return was a touchdown, and then a Cleveland Brown field goal, and then finally a Texans actual offensive touchdown. That was it. There was one offensive touchdown in that dreck of a game in which Deshaun Watson did not look well. And I would imagine a lot of people who are really not on his side were pretty happy he did not play well, and they were probably hoping Cleveland would lose.
Yeah, that game was gross. I mean, like Horrid. You mentioned, he sat out all of last season because he wanted to get traded from the Texans. And then, weirdly, his first game back after being suspended for sexual misconduct was against the Texans in Houston. And yeah, he played terribly. I'm certainly not surprised at all. I mean, if your expectation was that this player was going to suddenly like look, you know, to form after not playing in over 700 days, I mean, that's pretty difficult to do. But yeah, like you said, I mean, I've read various articles about fans booing him and, you know, T-shirts that fans are wearing and all of that. I mean, I just think it's a terrible look for the NFL, terrible look for the Browns. And yeah, I hope they don't play on primetime the rest of the season because I'd like to just not watch any of those games, to be honest.
Yeah, I doubt they will. I mean, I doubt they're jumping back into this thing, though we will see what happens with them. And that's kind of the NFL overview. And then on to the world popular game of soccer, of football, as they say. Are you... Again, we've talked about this because normally the World Cup's in the summer when there's not a lot going on, and I know I've watched a lot more of it now because of where it is and where now when it's being played, there's so much more going on. I'm not going to lie. I've not been watching it like I normally have. Certainly, I watched the U.S., you know, in the first rounds and get out of that and then lose to the Netherlands 3-1, so they're completely out of it. So in the round of 16... So we're getting ready to be just about done with that and go to the quarterfinals. But I haven't really been watching it. I just kind of been looking at any kind of highlights. And, you know, with obviously with news out there of Morocco beating Spain on penalty kicks and other upsets that may be out there or happened already. I really have not. Every now and then I'll do kind of a cursory, turn it on and look to see what's happened. But it's not held my interest like it normally would. And I do think time of the year has a lot to do with it because I'm so engaged in all the football that's going on now. I have not been given my time to this. Now, if U.S. was in it, certainly I still would be, but they're not.
Well, I watched the U.S. game on Saturday. It was a huge, huge bummer, even though it ended pretty much the way I thought that it would. I didn't really think they were going to make it through the quarterfinals. Actually, I saw some soccer fans on social media making fun of the United States pundits for talking about like who the U.S. would play if they made it through to the next round because of like how absurd that would be. Yeah, right. But like, yeah, well, that's what they're supposed to do on TV, right? Like, let us hope. Why else would we watch the game? But that didn't happen. The U.S. does not have to play Argentina in the next round. Like you said, this time of year is tough for watching soccer at 7 a.m. when I have to go into work, obviously, but also there's just so much other stuff on. I will say Saturday was a phenomenal sports day. I don't think I got off my couch except for to walk my dog like once, because the U.S. Netherlands kicked off at 10 a.m. Eastern, and then the Big 12 championship started at noon, and then the SEC championship was at 4, and then the Big 10 and the ACC championship were at 8, and then I went to bed and it was awesome. So in that regards, I will give credit to the World Cup for being on right now, because it's given me some of the laziest afternoons of my entire life this fall. But yeah, I wish it were not as crazy of a sports calendar time.
Right.
I will definitely be watching all the quarterfinal games, though. Like, this is kind of the part, like, England versus France, like, that's going to be crazy. This is the part of the tournament where there's so much on the line. The games have so much energy, and there's just, like, the atmosphere is going to be crazy for the rest of these games once the quarterfinals start. So I'm excited for it, but I totally understand fans that have been kind of checked out for the first few rounds.
And listen, if you're a casual fan, you know, you got 4 more years to wait now.
Right. And remember, it's going to be in the U.S. So
it's going to be
the time zone's going to be in Mexico. So the
Canada,
time zones
US,
are going to be
Mexico.
Better and
yeah.
you know, it'll,
I agree.
Games will be
and
on
listen,
prime time.
Eric Rinaldo came out with us last week, and he said he thinks because we're such a young team that we could really be peaking well in 2026. So we have that to hold on to, but we got to wait 4 years, right?
That's what U.S. men's soccer people have been telling us for our entire lives, right, Mike?
Yeah.
I mean, your life has been much, much longer than mine.
You're done?
Full of more promises. But the bright side, I think, for soccer fans, there's another World Cup in less than a year. The women play in Australia and New Zealand in June and July, and that's going to be incredible.
Oh, be all over that.
And I mean, so, yeah, if you're not soccered out yet, great news. There's another World Cup within the next year to look forward to.
And with a team that has a chance to actually win it. So not that we're front runners or anything.
Right. I mean, yeah, if you bought Team USA merch, you can still wear it for the women's team. It still works the same way. So yeah, that'll be fun.
So two things, yes, before we go. By the time we tape our show next week, I will be 60.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I will be 60. Yeah.
How are you feeling about that?
You know, I'm one of those, I feel great. My weight is, I'm like my high school senior weight, outside of the joints that I'll have to get replaced at some point, you know, which is fine.
Yeah.
I feel really good, and I've never really let, you know, the number bother me, you know, the 40 or the 50, but 60 seems like it's starting to get there, you know, like I don't even want to think about 70. I know I got 10 years, but that sounds like an ugly number to me.
70 does sound a little old, because you have to think about the age at which where you find out like a celebrity dies and you decide like, oh, they were so young, or oh, they lived a good life. And 70 feels like it's kind of,
Yeah.
You're still a little young, but that's fine, Mike, because that's in 10 years in a week.
Yeah, I got time. So
don't worry about 70. Just worry about 60.
60 is, it's a little bit, but I, like I said, I feel really good. But that number, I'm not going to lie, is getting me a little bit. So next time we chat, I will be 60. And also, by the next time we chat, between now and then, I will be going to the mailbox every day waiting for my cookie delivery. Just know it.
I will keep that in mind. The next time we chat, I will still be 28.